Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 183. Our guest this week, let's see if I can do this in one breath, is senior influencer manager at Kepler Interactive, a streamer, dancer, writer, former curator for IntelliGame Club, and current runner of Geeks and Grounds, co-runner, I guess, co-owner of Soft Not Weak, part owner maybe, organizer, host for Wholesome Games, advisor for Kowloon Knights, podcaster for the Indie Council. We have Jenny Kim Chica here. Thank you for being here.
That was outstanding. I'm applauding in my seat here. That was amazing.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.
First things first. You're My Butterfly, that song is by Crazy Town.
Oh my gosh.
Neither Lenny Kravitz nor Fatboy Slim.
Wow, you are getting the deep cuts already. Yeah, that was... I am notorious for not knowing celebrities, artists. I'm mismatching people and projects all the time in that realm, like music especially. So thank you for clarifying.
To be clear, I had to look that up. But I was watching it and I was like, okay. I'm pretty sure it's neither of those two.
Yeah. As I was saying it, I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is wrong.
Yeah, that's from Geeks and Grounds, one of your recent episodes. Geeks and Grounds is it's like a book club, but for games, where you brew up conversation about indie games. Every month you have a new game. You just did Cocoon. What's on tap for this month?
Yeah, so this month we will be playing Je Sens, which is a game by Don't Nod Tell Me Why fame and Life is Strange fame. This game from Don't Nod is super interesting because it is a very big departure from the sort of storytelling mechanics that they chose in these other titles compared to this one. And I think it's going to be a really nice reflective way to end out 2023. And I'm very excited to play.
Cool. So when you started Geeks and Grounds, you had an intro video to it. And one thing you say, you're like, this is not a sponsorship, but Intel sent you a laptop with which to do the work.
Yeah.
How did they even know that you were doing this?
Well, it's funny because they reached out to me and they basically were just like, hey, would you like a laptop? Which kind of happens occasionally, I think, especially now that I'm in this role that sits sort of between developer and influencer. And in my influencer work, brands will occasionally reach out and ask if I would like products, and I don't often take them. I'm actually quite selective because I have a day job and I can afford to be a bit more picky. But I, at the time, was like, I actually do need a laptop, and I mean, Intel is like in my neck of the woods. I live in Portland, Oregon, so it's like right... you know, not too far away. So I was like, yeah, this seems like a pretty interesting opportunity to build a relationship with Intel. And I asked them if it was okay. Like, I don't usually do hardware reviews. I'm not the most adept computer person, but I have this project. And would you be okay with me just talking about it being used to help start this club that I'm working on? And they said yes. And I still use the laptop to this day to plan out Geeks and Grounds, among other projects that I work on. So that was pretty cool.
So is Geeks and Grounds like a regular book club where someone inevitably has not done the reading or hasn't played the game and they're just like pretending as they're sitting there?
Yeah, and I think, you know, I emphasize with our club, like, really, it's more about the human connection. I wanted it as an opportunity, of course, to talk about these games that I'm really excited about. But a lot of the questions, while we'll start with game questions, end up being a bit more... folks joke. They're like, oh my gosh, this is my monthly existential moment. You know, some of these questions are not at all about the game, but really you can use the game to start reflecting. So we've talked about things like community development. We've talked about anxiety and loneliness. We've talked about work-life balance. And these are all using games as the starting point. And so even though folks come in sometimes and they were like, I haven't played the game, I just want to hang out and talk with y'all about these topics, it works out great. So
how do you sort of keep it a two-way discussion when, you know, obviously the video is you and Joel, your co-host, you're talking to the audience?
Yeah, it's a needle that I'm still constantly like trying to thread and make sure and have a balance with, because I think a lot of people also enjoy just being able to listen. I think, and I'm that way in online communities as well, where there are some communities that I'm a part of that I really just enjoy being present, but not necessarily having a conversation that's back and forth. So we wanted to have that there for people who enjoy lurking. But for me, I get rewarded in having the conversation with the community members. And so our Discord is really the hub for that. In our Discord, we also have monthly, we call them just monthly hangouts. And every month, folks can come in. We usually will have something in the background, either like music or a puzzle that people can also work on as we talk. And that allows it to be more of a conversation. And I'm trying to figure out ways to bring in more voices in the newsletter and the podcast, where I've asked people actually who've written me responses, because there's in the newsletter I'll ask a question every month or every week and folks will write me back, and it's really an honor to read some of these responses that are incredibly vulnerable at times and really funny in other times. And I will ask them permission to include their responses in the newsletter. We've read responses out loud on the podcast, so it allows for a little bit more of it to feel like a conversation and less like maybe an educational lecture. Because both of us used to be teachers. So
right. I was going to get into that. Right before we do, though, do you pair, just because of the name Geeks and Grounds and the brewing a conversation, do you pair any specific drinks for each game? Is it like, oh, this one is like a dark roast?
Yeah, so that's in the future goal. I would love to have like a drink recommendation to go with games, or like, you know, kind of like your cafe snack that we recommend you snack on this or drink this roast when you play the game, or this brew, could be tea too. So that is in the future. That's something that I'm working towards.
Cool. So yeah, education. You have a degree in anthropology and a master's of education. How did you end, you were a teacher too, as you said. How did you end up here in the games industry?
Wow, yeah, you really did your research. I was an educator. I was actually teaching full-time middle school and high school and creating YouTube videos at the same time. For me, I was trying to figure out how to record gameplay and bring in some clips for the classroom. And as that happened, I was like, you know what? I just want to record videos on YouTube for fun. And at that time, not a ton of people were creating content about indie games. And I was, you know, just sort of on the off chance got discovered by a company that was curating indie games in this sort of form that they were trying to do like Game Pass before Game Pass was the thing. And they reached out to me and said, you're making videos on all these indie games that we're actually curating for our, you know, service here. Would you like to create content for us? And that was in the summertime. And I said, yes, because teachers don't earn a lot of money. And any additional contract work I could take on during the summer was always something I was looking for. And by the time summer was over, and I was getting ready to like start the school year, they offered a full-time contract where I decided, you know what, I'm going to jump into the games industry. I'm going to do community management here and create content for them. And if it doesn't work out, I've got my teaching license. I can always go back. But it worked out and I miss teaching, but I do love being in the game industry, and doing things like Geeks and Grounds helps channel some of the educator energy in a different form. So yeah.
Cool. Have any of your former students like discovered what you do now?
Yes, I have. It's really funny. There was a big YouTuber who did this like feature of all these sort of cozier content creators, and I was featured on his like compilation, and a bunch of my students messaged me because they watch him and they were like, wait, you do content now? And so they've seen that. And my students, a lot of them, especially once I left teaching, I had a rule when I was a teacher, I did not friend any of my kiddos on social media. But once I left, I was like, you know what? Fine. If you want to follow me, cool. And after that, I have stayed in touch with a few of them actually, and it's quite wonderful. Some of them have their own kids now, and it's very weird.
I was a TA briefly years ago, and I found that this helped. But did you find that your interest in games made it easier to connect with students?
Absolutely. I think it was just another way that they saw me as a person and as a human. And, you know, I could delve into the things I was getting frustrated with in games or excited about. And it was nice because after school every day, I had a laptop cart and I let them play like Minecraft because there was education Minecraft. And I would use it in the classroom and I was like, yeah, just you can play Minecraft after school, hang out with me. I always brought snacks. And it allowed me to also hang out with them, not in a like sort of formal education setting. It allowed me to see them as more relaxed and I think more just sort of like chill versions of themselves than versus me always being a teacher, giving them homework or teaching a lesson, you know. So it was really nice to establish that relationship with them.
Did you ever have to, like, with someone, like, playing games on their phone and you, like, you know, as a teacher, you have to discipline there, but were you like, oh, I'd rather be doing that, too?
Yeah, I mean, and I would tell them, I'm like, believe me, I would rather be playing games right now, too. But sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And fortunately, my students, you know, I taught middle school primarily, and for the most part, I feel like students in general really respond to that, like, treating them a bit like adults, appealing to their common sense, and for the most part it worked out just fine. But yeah, I did have to take away a phone or two in my day.
So Wholesome Games, capital W, capital G, Wholesome Games, yeah. Started in 2020. In the FAQ it says that Wholesome Games wants to showcase wholesome games, which mm-hmm. also the FAQ explains how that's a loose term and even a bit of a problematic term, but basically cozy games. And it certainly seems to me that wholesome games are quite popular now. Do you take any credit for that?
I don't know. I feel like we have definitely been a part of a lot of different factors that have kind of all happened in the same time that led to this sort of rise in popularity of wholesome and cozy games. I think, you know, the stars aligned kind of in a lot of different ways where these games always existed in their own communities and in their own forms. Like back in the day, like when we had Neopets or Gaia Online or even like Nintendo forever has been kind of this company that has created games that lean towards more of that wholesome, cozy side of things. But it wasn't until 2020 that this verbiage really started to solidify. I think because of, honestly, COVID and everyone staying at home and lockdown and this articulation of like, we need something comforting. We need something that brings compassion and like joy and sort of a sense of uplifting energy to our lives. And that comfort is something we looked for, especially in a year like 2020 and some of the subsequent years. And I think that combined with the factor that, you know, as Wholesome Games, like capital W, Wholesome Games, we kind of came together at around that time to talk about how we wanted to start a community about these games because we couldn't find anyone else at the time interested in these games. It all happened at the same time and really led to that burst of interest. But yeah, it's like it was always there. I think it was just everything aligning at once.
Is it fair to say that predominantly wholesome games are indie games?
I think that's pretty fair to say. I think a lot of these games typically are smaller in terms of scope, in terms of team. I think a lot of AAA games or like super large games may have wholesome elements, but don't necessarily categorize themselves as wholesome entirely. Whereas I think in indie, you do see that more often.
And in your GDC talk on wholesome games, part of the panel you were part of, an attendee mm-hmm. named Anna asked about the future of cozy games, and you joked, cozy esports. And Victoria has this look like, oh, like she's clearly mm-hmm. thinking about that. mm-hmm. So let's explore that. What would cozy esports be?
I mean, there's this game called Suica Game out right now that is basically a watermelon. You try to make a watermelon out of matching other fruits. And it's just like, that for me, I was joking yesterday. I was playing. I was like, if this was the cozy esport, like this is it, because it's just you matching fruits. It's super chill, but there's a score, and it's actually quite challenging. I don't know. I think cozy esports, I would love to see if we're going to get competitive, like Stardew farming, like. I guess that's speedrunning maybe, but maybe there's like design elements. Like I'd love to see what are the ways that we can like design different farms and I don't know how we would score it or rate it. This is why I don't do esports. I have no like no vision for that. But I don't know. I think it would be really cool to see like I think the idea for me is like these sort of recognitions of coziness can be competitive in like positive ways. You saw it in kind of Animal Crossing with fashion shows. I loved that the ways people got creative in Animal Crossing and they did fashion shows and competitions and ratings and like things like that. Those were like close to what I see for cozy game esports. So yeah, no answer there, but I would love to continue brainstorming. Mm-hmm. But Suika Game would be on the list if we had an esport for cozy games.
One that you, I don't know if recently highlighted, but you definitely highlighted, Beastie Ball might be a good one.
Yeah, exactly.
How did it feel having your own game, Spirit Swap, on your last Wholesome Direct?
Oh, so cool. I didn't have any part because, you know, obviously I'm part of the curator group for the Direct, but whenever, because all of us are developers in different spaces. And so whenever we have games where that, like, what is it, conflict of interest may arise, we recuse ourselves. So when they were debating on whether or not Spirit Swap should be in, I was like, let me get out of the meeting, call me when it's done so I can come back, help organize the rest of the games. And so when I found out it made it, I was super excited because in making Spirit Swap, I just know that the community, the Wholesome community, would very much appreciate the game. So it was an honor.
Let's be honest, it'd be devastating if you came back and they're like, nah.
I know, I would have been so sad. But it's also like, at the same time, I know the process, and truly, every time we've done a Wholesome Direct, it has gotten, and even the Wholesome Snacks, which is like our winter showcase that's smaller, even that has gotten more and more competitive each year, in the sense of we get so many submissions, and something that would have absolutely made it year one by now, because the level of quality that we're getting and the sheer number of submissions we're getting, it's impossible to include everything. And it's heartbreaking because some incredible games don't end up making the cut a lot of the time. And you just, that's why I always advocate, if we can get more showcases and more folks doing similar work highlighting games, like, I would not be unhappy with that. We need more because there's so many games out there. So if we didn't make it, I would have understood, but I would have been very sad.
I believe Wholesome Games has just launched its first Humble Bundle.
Yes. Yeah. As of like yesterday.
Can you tell us about that? Why should we get in on the Humble Bundle?
Oh my goodness. I mean, I am biased, but I think it's probably one of the strongest curated Humble Bundles in a minute. We have some like Game Award nominees in there. Venba is on there. And honestly, Venba is just outstanding on its own. I would just get the bundle for Venba. But along with that, we have Wildflowers, Barren Breakfast, Smooshy Come Home, just so many games that are hallmarks of not only games that are cozy and feel good to play mechanically, but I think thematically they all do what I hope to see more of in games, where they're really intentional about their story and they have something to say in some form. And it's not all heavy, I think. I think Venba is maybe like more emotionally, there's a little bit of like the generational, not necessarily trauma, but there's generational stuff to be worked through when you play Venba. But like Smooshy Come Home, for example, is a bit more relaxed, but they all have something to say that I appreciate. And not only that, the bundle goes to a really good cause. The fundraiser is for Save the Children, and we picked them because specifically the funds are going to be going to food, water, and other humanitarian aid for kids and families in Gaza. So we were also very, very passionate about that specific cause. And so I think on a video game level and a just trying to do something better with our time in the world, angle, I think there's lots of reasons to get the bundle. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm biased.
One of your favorite games, Outer Wilds. I have to stop you before you say anything too much, because this has come up on the show before. My BFF, it is his favorite game, and he won't let me... I've never played it, I've seen nothing, and he won't let me watch streams of it, because he's like, you can't, you have to go in cold. So I just wanted to bring up that that there's an overlap there, and that I still haven't got to it.
Your BFF has very good taste, and also that is very good advice. You should definitely keep listening to him, but also you should play it.
Yes, I should. How scary was Subnautica in VR for you?
I will never play Subnautica in VR ever again. I think Subnautica, it's funny because we were actually just, I was just streaming and we were just talking about Subnautica because I was playing Lottlenaut, which is this very, again, cozy, wholesome game about being in the water and cleaning up trash, cleaning up an ocean. And everyone's like, when are you going to play Subnautica? Even not in VR, Subnautica is terrifying. Subnautica in VR, I like put on the headset, will never do it again. It's just too real, and I get too into it and too immersed, and I will embarrass myself in a variety of ways. But even not in VR, Subnautica is terrifying, and I need to work up the courage, because something about both the ocean and space hold so much respect for them, because those are environments that we do not naturally belong in, yet we have made ourselves able to go into both of those environments in different ways. But the just utter respect of, like, we're not meant to be here, and in an instant, anything could go wrong. Even in a video game, it's like not real, but even in a video game, that doesn't escape me. And so Outer Wilds was this for me, as well as Subnautica, where it's just there's a wonderful existential dread when I play those games.
Well, related, would you ever try a VR Ferris wheel ride?
No, my gosh, you really know your stuff. This is like, what is it, the Hot Wings, where I'm constantly amazed at the Hot Ones interviewer and how he knows everything. You just, like, outstanding research. No, I would not go on a VR Ferris wheel. Now that I'm thinking about it, it's just the feeling of hovering over the air. I do not mind roller coasters. I don't even mind drop rides, but there's something about this slow, painful hovering that Ferris wheels just sends a shiver down my spine.
What about as a famous Unpacking fan, the game Unpacking, can you explain why it's fun and soothing to do things like unpack or pressure wash or cut the grass in video games, and then in real life you're like, ugh?
That's a really good question. I've actually been thinking a fair amount about that, because I do find, like, it's odd, right? Like, I could go mow the lawn right now and it would actually get something done in the real world that I need to do, but I'm going to do it instead in a video game. I think, the physical effort. I mean, like, mowing lawn can be kind of hard, and there's a physicality that I think is really good, but also when I'm mentally exhausted, and I think a lot of people, when you're tired, you've had a long day at work, it can be really hard to push yourself to do something that is physically exhaustive, like moving around the house, doing chores when you're already just drained. And so something about games, especially those that allow you to organize or sort, clean, power wash, do all of that, it allows you the satisfaction of having done something productive without the physicality of it. And I think there's something to be said about having a long day at work, maybe when you're at a corporate job or doing something that you maybe don't feel like you have control over and you don't get the satisfaction, finally finding that in a game. Or even, like, if you're in your house, I don't know if you're like this, please, you may be a better human than I am.
Probably not.
But, like, I will get these moods where I'm like, I'm going to clean my house and it's going to be so beautiful. And you get about a quarter of the way through and then you don't want to do it anymore, but you've already dumped everything out on the floor. And so then you just end up, like, with a dirtier house almost. Unpacking is great because if you ever get the urge to clean, you can start sorting, unpacking, cleaning. And if you want to stop, you can. And nothing is worse the wear, you know, nothing is worse for it. And so I think there's that element too, where you can kind of put it down and not have it be an unfinished project necessarily because of its digital sort of separate format.
I have yet to play unpacking. I think I'd be particularly bad at it because along the same vein as what you're saying there, but I think slightly different. So to be clear, I am a lazy guy, but I don't think this is laziness. I am just, my brain isn't wired. Like I look around me and there are clearly just things strewn about, but I look at it and there's no like, oh, well, I should put this here. Like there, in my head, it's just like, well, where else would it go?
Yeah, well, I think it's funny because I was talking to my partner, Sam, because he, I think, is very similar where, and I was reading a study also, and it's a gendered study, so I don't know what they did in terms of like looking at non-binary folks, but they were comparing men and women specifically, and they were saying that women, for whatever reason in their brains, are a bit more attuned to items in space, and so like not space but less like in physical spaces, and so being tidy is actually really mentally satisfying for women in particular, according to the study, because they're more attuned to when objects are not in their place or when they're like extra objects around just not in a place that they should be, whereas in the study men did not register those objects as negatively impacting if they were not in a specific spot or in the quote right place. Super interesting.
I feel like that lets me off the hook.
Maybe a little bit. I think that's, you know, but then I was talking, because I was talking with Sam about it, and I was like, this doesn't mean you don't clean.
Exactly.
Just means you, I have proof that it bothers me scientifically now, so you have to help because you care about me.
What games did your dad tend to play when you were growing up? And did any of them transfer to you?
Oh my goodness. Honestly, my dad played games like Diablo, Half-Life. Ooh, like he had like the orange box, you know? And he had WoW. And honestly, now that I'm like, none of those really translated to me as an adult. I mean, I'll play a little bit like Path of Exile, which is kind of in that Diablo-ish sort of I would say similar genre, but yeah, he was really into first person shooters and I am not. So it definitely did not translate. He did get me into Heroes of Might and Magic 3 though.
Ooh,
and
good one.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love that game so much. So I think that's maybe the only title that's really carried over, is like in general a love of fantasy and specifically like RPGs and strategy in that way. But he also loved first person shooters and that is not my jam. Mm-hmm.
Why did your mom not allow you to get game guides until you had beaten the game?
Oh, she was just kind of like, what's the point?
Was she a gamer too?
No, and that's the thing. She did not grow up with games. She didn't play games. And so I think for her, she was kind of like, I bought you this game and you're not even going to like try to use your brain to play it. And so she wouldn't really let us get the guides until afterwards. I think once we got into like late middle school, early high school, we had like our own money from like part-time work. So she couldn't really tell us not to, and she kind of eased up on that, but as a kid she was like, why? She just was like, no, play the game, you figure it out.
I love your mom's like the first ever get good.
Yeah, she was. She definitely, she was just like, no, yeah, get good, be a gamer, try harder.
What video game has the most danceable music? And you've done a freestyle to one of my favorite soundtracks, Transistor.
Oh my gosh, Transistor's beautiful. Danceable music, see.
And you, not including, you know, like Guitar Hero, Just Dance, all that.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, for the pure, unadulterated joy that the soundtrack gives, and I think this soundtrack gives, like, good dancing vibes to anyone who, even if you're not a dancer and you just want to move around to a song versus people who want to, like, if you want to professionally dance to it, sure. Katamari Damacy. absolute banger of a soundtrack, and you cannot not bop your head at the very least to that soundtrack.
Have you ever done like a, because I know you do choreography, have you ever done like a full you know, show to video game music?
Oh, that is my dream. I actually, it's codename Project AFK. And I have actually an outline for a show. I have pieces sort of outlined, like just written form, but I have not been able to bring that to life quite yet. But I'd like to do that in the future.
So let's talk about the life of a senior influencer manager at Kepler Interactive. First question there, is Kepler ever like, because I mean, you do so much influencing of your own, of all sorts of titles. Are they ever like, hey, stop promoting other companies' games?
You know, what I do love about Kepler is that from the jump, they were very open and very understanding about me just being a person who likes to do a lot of things. And that was really one of my big questions to them, because I was like, it is honestly a deal breaker for me to work somewhere and have them restrict what I do in my personal time. And honestly, they've been very candid, and they're like, frankly, what you do is a benefit to the company because you're out there and people know you. And so eventually it's going to pay off in the sense that, like, people, if they know you and like you, will probably think more highly of the company, you know, in sort of this associative way. So they've been very wonderful about letting me do things like Wholesome or my own content creation, which is great.
So it sounds like they kind of know what your role is, but have you ever had your boss be like, are you actually working, or are you just watching streams right now?
Well, the best thing is watching streams is my work.
Right.
So, yeah, what I love also about Kepler is we're a remote company, and most everyone else is in the office in the UK. There's like a Singapore sort of branch, a group of people, but I am the only one on the West Coast of the US. And from the very beginning, my boss, my direct manager, he was kind of like, I am going to trust you to do your job. If you don't do your job, we'll talk. But like, if things are getting done and things are looking good, like, I'm not going to baby you. You know, it's like, you don't have to tell me when you're going on lunch. You don't have to tell me if you're like going for a walk and you need 5 minutes break. You know what? You just do what you need to do and like just make sure it gets done. And so the autonomy that I've been able to have has been really rewarding. And I think it comes because I've done, you know, all of my other roles, I've proven myself, you know, a couple of times. And so I think there's that element too, but it's nice because the company is so remote and everyone is kind of trusted to do what they need to do. And it's so far worked out great.
What I assume to be the worst part of working remote is presumably you did not get to meet Matt Berry, who did a voiceover for the Cat Quest 3 trailer.
I did not. Although I don't know if any of the team got to meet him, because I think it was all via like email. Maybe one of the devs did for like during the recording time, but I'm pretty sure none of like the publishing side got to meet him. If they did and they held it back from me, I would be very disappointed.
I love that man, as everyone does.
Honestly, when they said that we were going to try to get Matthew Berry to do the VO, I was like, oh my gosh, like, the fact that we're even at the point of asking him already is kind of like dream situation. And the fact that he said yes was just the cherry on top.
Yeah. Cool. Have you ever had a situation, so, you know, influencer manager, part of what you do, largely what you do is you find influencers to promote your product. Have you ever had a situation where an influencer kind of goes rogue, like they do something detrimental to your brand, not even necessarily when they're reviewing your stuff, but just like down the road you're like, ooh, that doesn't align with us?
Yeah, there have been a handful of times, you know, as an influencer manager, for folks who also don't really know what that is, because it's a relatively new role, I guess, I work with creators, I vet them. A lot of my time is spent watching streams, getting to know creators and figuring out what they like, so that, and also if their values align with ours, because then I would love to work with them, find a way to do so. There have definitely been times where creators have gone rogue. And like, I think the most typical thing that happens when someone goes rogue is they break an embargo and they like post content or stream content before it is allowed. Embargo is basically the point in time in which you can start posting or talking about a game. And if you break embargo, it means you've leaked information that should not be shared. And that has definitely happened. And it's always, always, on the weekend at a time when I'm like hanging out with friends or family, or, you know, just like having a great, great relaxing moment, or it's midnight, you know, and all of a sudden I get this notification or someone posts and texts me like, hey, I think this is it out? Is it supposed to be out yet? And I look, and of course it's not supposed to be out. And so I have to drop everything to try and like get them to take it down. So that's never fun. And there have been cases where, you know, I do my best to vet folks in terms of making sure their values are aligned and that, you know, not only are they good fit for us, but we're a good fit for them. And that occasionally does not work out. Nothing dramatic has happened, but there have been some cases where I'm like, okay, we probably won't reach out again to this creator just because of just things I've seen posted or sort of the ways that they've acted or interacted in the space. But fortunately, that's been quite rare, I think, because of just the amount of work I put into trying to make sure I'd get it right the first time.
Right. Yeah. I imagine a good portion of that's what I meant by the streaming question. Like, you're really researching these people, making sure it fits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. In a Q&A with Simon Carlis for the Game Discover Co. newsletter, you give some TikTok marketing advice, and one thing you say is avoid the hard sell because personal voice does better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering where the line is, because certainly, you know, there's that sort of like backlash of like getaway brand and that, like, how do you avoid that, like, how do you do, fellow kids kind of sound?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's hard because... It's hard because when someone tells you, use your personal voice, all of a sudden, at least for me, I'm like, what is my voice? I don't know. And so there is an amount of experimentation for anyone who posts on social media and like wants to facilitate like their own content on there in whatever way. I think there's an amount of experimentation that has to happen. And you may have some hello, fellow kids moments. You may have some things that don't hit. And so I think really... a more important strategy is to see what you enjoy and what resonates with you, what you are drawn to, and feel free to play with that. I think that will lead to you finding your voice and developing a more authentic personal voice on social media than looking for what is the most popular thing and trying to jump on the trends. So there's a slight difference. Like, you're still looking online, but the framework is a little different. It's like, what are you personally drawn to versus what's trending? And eventually you'll hopefully look at what's trending and be able to see if you're personally drawn to it. But I think... that's where the hello fellow kids and the mistakes come in, is when brands don't necessarily think about what they're actually personally drawn to and allow the social media person also. That's a big thing. Let the social media person determine that, not the CEO or anyone who's not touching the account. They shouldn't have maybe final say, I think. I think they should trust their social media person. But I imagine like for example, one of my pet peeves on social media is, okay, so Wendy's, the brand account, is known for being like spicy on social media. I actually don't know if they do it really anymore, but at the time, a few years ago, they were like, they would clap back, they would do all sorts of things on social and just be generally like a little antagonistic, but from Wendy's, it just worked. After Wendy started doing that, so many brands started doing their own version of, oh, I want to be spicy like Wendy's and clap back and call people out. And it never really quite hit the same. And that for me is an example of like following what you think is trendy versus actually evaluating what is good for you and your personal or company brand.
Yeah, I agree with that. My day job actually is not games related, but is social media related. And... My personal brand is definitely, I am not a father, but dad jokes. I'm very corny.
Yeah.
And I do think there's a level of giving the audience some credit. Like, I think they know when you're having fun and they like that, you know, as opposed to, it's really obvious when you're just trying to jump on a bandwagon and then it just falls flat.
Yeah. And I think this is something I've struggled with as well, where, like, for example, my brand of social media is not super reactive or clap back or spicy or memey. Like, that is just not my sense of humor. And if I ever tried to do that, it would look so wrong, because that's just not how I am as a person. And so it's taken me a while, but to have the confidence to know, like, you do not have to be that on the internet. The internet is so big. You can be yourself, like, and again, finding yourself is a whole different thing, but you can be yourself, and you don't have to be what the most popular thing is to find success and to find community. And I think sometimes companies especially forget that. But yeah, that's cool. I love dad jokes, so that's great.
I need a new phone desperately. I actually got my phone died at like 20% the other day. And when I plugged it back in, it literally had a message that, like, the short version, it was like, you have to get rid of me. Like, I cannot operate anymore. but when I get a new phone, got any cool indie mobile games I should check out?
Ooh, okay. Let's see. I'm curious, do you have Apple? Are you Android or
so
Apple,
I've always been, I guess, Apple, iOS. But largely that's because, like, my current phone is an iPhone 6. Like, I don't tend to get a new one. I'm happy with whatever.
Oh gosh, it's so tough. I mean, we talked about Unpacking. That is a game that is on mobile. So I can't not shout out Unpacking. I think Assemble with Care is a really lovely game. I love that one because it feels very diegetic, where you are using the touchscreen to fix objects and move around, like, little bits and pieces, like screws and wires and things, to learn the story about the people who brought in the object for you to fix. Oh gosh, I know Vampire Survivors is on mobile.
Oh,
and
I do
honestly
want to try that. Yeah,
it's so good. It's too good, honestly. Don't get it unless you're ready to devote hours of your life to it. And it's kind of a deep cut, but Bird Alone, for anyone who's looking for, like, a really gentle, sort of sentimental, philosophical experience, it's basically an app that you can check a couple times a day, once or twice a day. But you have a parrot that you take care of, and just, like, it asks you questions and gets you to reflect on things. It's a really lovely game, and it just kind of, like, went under the radar when it came out. And I'll just do one more. What's another one that I could do? When the Past Was Around, that one is really lovely. It's by Touge Interactive, or Touge Productions, which they made Coffee Talk. They helped publish A Space for the Unbound. So that's a beautiful, like, puzzle game about love and moving on. So those are just a few recommendations. There's a lot of games on mobile, though. A lot of really good ones.
Thank you so much. What is the polymer clay project that you want to start?
Ooh, okay. I just finished playing Mineko's Night Market probably like 2 weeks ago, and I've been really wanting to create just sort of fan art piece to celebrate that game. The two developers are wonderful people, and so I think the next polymer clay project is something related to Mineko's Night Market. I love doing indie game polymer projects. I think it's just fun to create something related to something that I've played.
Well, I didn't realize this is something you've done before.
Yeah, no, I don't post. It's kind of funny because I've been trying to have hobbies that I don't post about, because it just allows me to feel, I don't know, like, not everything is online. But I have done a couple of, like, little fan sort of figures, I guess, for different games. I've done like Among Us's. Those are just fun to make, like little Among Us space critters. I don't know what they are. Humans? Are they human?
I don't know.
Space beans. But I love making, like, little Among Us's. I actually want to do a project where I leave them around town for people to find. I think that would be really fun. And I've also done a polymer, like a couple of Ghibli polymers, and I started one for Pikuniku.
And then we'll end on, so way back, I want to say 8 years ago, that's when you started your channel. I may have even said that already. But your early channel goals you put up in a Chica chat, you said you want to create community, you want to combine your interests of video games, education, and dance, and you want to learn. Can you tell us if and how you have done those things?
Wow, I have not even watched back the Chica chat. That is a long time. You know, what's kind of cool is I feel like I have, to varying degrees, done all of those things. It's kind of cool to actually hear that back. You know, I have a variety of communities that I've been able to facilitate. I think the one that I have like a really soft spot in my heart for right now is the Geeks and Grounds community, just because it's like, not huge. It's a small group of folks, but I think we've had such moving conversations and people are so kind and wonderful to one another that I'm so proud of how that community has continued to grow. And it's sort of this like subset of the Kimchika community. I've definitely combined my love of dance and games and just education. Again, I think dance has kind of ebbed a little bit, especially with, you know, the lockdown that kind of put a stop on a lot of the dance projects, but I have been getting back into it. So it's kind of nice to have that back in my life again. And did I just say to learn? Did I not specify like what I wanted to learn?
You probably did, and I probably just wrote down learn.
No, I was like, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if I just said that and just be like, I just want to learn. But I definitely have over the last, yeah, like 8 or so years. It's been really, really exciting to be in the industry. And I think we feel like the games industry is old, but it's not. It's still a toddler, I feel like, compared to a lot of other media. So I feel like it's been very exciting being in an industry where we're still, you know, we have some bumps. We have things that we need to fix and improve upon, but it's still a very good industry that I'm very passionate about, that I want to see grow. So, yeah, I think I've made moves on all of those goals, which is kind of cool.
Nice. Well done.
Thank you.
People can check out your work at Kepler Interactive, at Soft Not Weak, at Wholesome Games, geeksandgrounds.com. You're Kim Chica on YouTube and on Twitch. Jenny, Kim Chica, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. And again, like, I think this has been one of the most interesting interviews in terms of like in conversations, in terms of questions. I think you've asked some of the most specific and wonderfully unexpected questions ever. So thank you.
Thank you.